Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Dr. Marilyn Gaston, Director, Bureau of Primary Health Care, Health Resources and Services Administration, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And joining us in our conversation is Fred Fagerstrom, another PwC partner.
We know that the Bureau describes a customer-focused delivery system as one of the that serves a universal population. Can you explain the premise of this vision? And also, given the customer-focused vision, who do you consider to be your customers?
Fred, the customers for us are the people that we're trying to serve. That's our number one customer, the people that need quality health care, the people that are having health outcomes that we know they deserve to be better and that we know they can have. So it's the people that we're trying to reach across, the millions of people that are having trouble getting health care. One of the things we have learned from this program, because you've heard me talk about the health centers that we build and put out there, that are we're in partnership. These are not federal programs, but the communities own them. They own them because they are run by community boards. They are run by the people that come to the health center. So this helps them to take charge of their care. So they are the ones that say, When are the hours of operation? What are the services that are needed in this community? What kind of people do we want to hire to take care of it, et cetera? So that they really run it. That makes a big difference in terms of, that's why when you see one health center, you've just seen one health center that you need, because they're all very different in each community. That is being customer focused. In the Bureau, our bottom line and how we make decisions is really based on what is in the best interest of the people that we're trying to serve. And so that customer focus makes a major difference. It maintains the quality of the care. It improves the level of cultural competence that we're trying to achieve. And so we think that is the only way to do business. Now, we do have other customers, too. For instance, you might say that the Hill is a customer, that we are there to serve at the will of the Hill. The administration, the secretary is a customer of ours. I mean, we're there to serve with the secretary. Also, all of our constituents, the American Medical Association, is a customer. All of our partners that we work with are also customers, but our number one are the people that need the care.
Part of your work at the Bureau, we know, involves providing grants to fund community health care programs. Could you talk to us about the grant process, sort of what type of programs do you fund and how is selection made?
Right, that's a good question. One of the main challenges in the Bureau, and as you heard me say, we put health care into needy areas. Well, the question is, how do you determine need? What are the criteria? Is it based on poverty? Yes, that's a very important one. Is it based on how many physicians are already in an area? Yes, those are the two most important providers in terms of the neediest scoring, in a way. But also, it might be related to how many are unemployed. What about uninsured? All kinds of aspects. So that the main driver for us in making any decision is need. So that when an application comes in, there are various criteria that we score and rank applications on in terms of how needy is that community. What are the health indices? How high is their life, or how low is their life expectancy? How high is their incidence of syphilis? How high is it? Okay. So various health indices also tell us the need in the community. Applications come in from various communities, okay? And we have objective review committees. We have peers that look at these applications and then rank them. And then we make the decision at the Bureau based on those scores. Also based on recommendations from our state partners. We don't do this at the federal level without input from the state where they are, because they're their local states and they know very well where they think the neediest areas are. So we do this in combination with them. So we look at need number one. We also look at their capability to provide this. You know, how successful are they going to be? We don't want to build a health center here 1 year, and then in 2 years it's going down the tubes because they haven't been able to sustain in this competitive environment what they need to do to provide quality care. So a number of things come into play as we make those decisions.
How do you measure the results? What might be the role of patient surveys or other mechanisms and performance measures in determining the quality of care provided?
Yeah, that's one of the most difficult things that we are facing. We're doing a better job, but we need to improve that. Patient surveys are very important because they do give you a sense of the quality of the care as the patient perceives it. But there are a whole lot of other measures that we think are important. For instance, we monitor very closely these programs. We send out every 3 to 5 years, depending on how well a center is doing. You know, we might send them out every year, depending on how well they're doing, but usually it's about 3 to 5 years. We send out a team of consultants that go in the center. They might spend 3 to 5 days in there. They look at the budgets. They look at how the programs are managed. They looked at how is the board interacting. They review charts, patient charts, and see if they are providing the care that should go on. So we look at the clinical aspects, and they interview patients while they're there so that there's a thorough review, almost the way JCO, the Joint Commission for Accreditation for Hospitals. And in fact, many of our centers are also reviewed by JCO and get accredited in terms of how well they're doing the job. So we take this very seriously. Also, we not only do that to see, and you know, not to be the police necessarily or to try to defund the program, but to say, okay, you've got an A in clinical, you've got a B in your patient satisfaction, but, you know, your billing and your management is just, it needs some help. So we're going to send some consultants in and help you improve that. So it's a constant process of improvement. Quality improvement is what goes on, too, and that's another way that, and, you know, as I said, Fred, we take it very seriously. We put a fair amount of money in it to ensure that these programs are good programs.
What are the management challenges of coordinating these programs there? Across the country, communities, different organizations, different governments, the partnerships you describe, how does it all really happen?
You know, that's a major challenge that I had when you talk about the role of the director. Yeah, how as the director pull all this together? And it is a feat. One of the ways that we try to do it is, number one, we have this huge infrastructure out there, meaning that it's not only at the community level with the programs that are giving the care. I mentioned we have a whole state infrastructure, too, that's involved with each of those health centers in their respective. We have a regional infrastructure that is also helping to monitor and look at. So all of them give communication to one another. Oh, and also we have clinical networks of physicians and nurses that are involved in every state that are looking at what's going on with the care and where the need is, et cetera. And then they communicate not only with each other, but then they come to a focal point, which is in the bureau and in the agency. And that's how we try to do it. It's tough. Now, technology, we're getting better and better as we use more and more of the technology. We have a major challenge with that because still there are hard to reach areas with technology. The rural areas, again, here we are. You know, in the urban areas, it's okay. It's hard with poor health centers that might not have enough money to get up to speed technologically. We should have electronic medical records in all these centers, and that's a way we're moving. But, you know, we've got a long way to go, almost 4,000 health centers all doing the same thing and technologically on the cutting edge. We have to move in that direction, hopefully. And that's a vision for the next 5 years, that we, in 5 years, we will really be way down the road when it comes to technology. Centers are doing teleconferencing, for instance, in the isolated areas. There are some centers in really isolated areas where there might be one room and a nurse practitioner is in there. Okay, and a doctor might fly in once or twice a week, helicopter, et cetera. But also, if you put some capability for that nurse to teleconference out in turn to a medical center what's going on with the patient, well, that revolutionizes the care for that community. And so more and more of that is going on, too. So, and how do you coordinate all that? I think that, again, we're going to try to do a much better job technologically, but it's a real challenge.
It's a good stopping point for a break. Rejoin us after the break as we can continue our discussion with Dr. Marilyn Gaston of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This is the Business of Government Hour.
Professors Catherine Knapp and J. Edward Kellogg examined diversity programs at the federal government agencies in their new report, A Changing Workforce, Understanding Diversity Programs in the Federal Government, sponsored by the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. This report is available at endowment.pwcglobal.com.